Welcome to another episode of Isms and Schisms, and we made it. We got through that last episode on pain, and now we may have our reward. I don't know if me writing and you listening to these two episodes make us masochistic or not, but I'm glad we can talk now about something a little more pleasurable. That's right, this week we are talking about the pursuit of pleasure. If it feels good, do it. If it just feels right, get on with it. If it's not good, don't do it. That basically sums up everything about hedonism. In this week's ism, the highest goal in life is one's own pleasure. All other considerations are secondary. So of course, this includes the physical, sensual pleasures of food, drink, and sex. But it's far more than that. It's anything that we enjoy. From reading a book, to seeing a beautiful sunset, to finding satisfaction in our work, to watching something on your phone while also watching something on TV. So what does hedonism look like within a Christian theological framework? Is such a thing even possible? Shouldn't the Christian life be super serious, following rules, denying the self, dying? Where does pleasure fit in all this? So pour yourself a drink, depending on your age and location. And actually, if you're listening to this in the car, maybe don't do that. Wait till you get home. Put on your slippers, curl up under a comfy blanket, and ask someone to give you a massage and feed you grapes as we dive into self-indulgent debauchery and examine hedonism. Pleasure is the first good. It is the beginning of every choice and every aversion. It is the absence of pain in the body and of troubles in the soul. That was the thought of Epicurus, a Greek philosopher who gave us Epicureanism, which is similar to what we are looking at today, but a little different. Hedonism might be a drunk and uninhibited version of Epicureanism. So what is it that you enjoy? What brings you pleasure? Hopefully this podcast brings a modicum of enjoyment to your life, but whatever it is, do you pursue it at any cost? What is it that you don't enjoy that decreases your pleasure or enjoyment? Would you choose not to rock up to a dentist appointment for a root canal and instead go to the beach? Would you never choose to exercise or do some gardening or clean the house? And instead stay up late watching movies and eating fatty, sugary food? If that's you, maybe you are a hedonist. Now, just to clarify, sometimes it's just great staying up late watching movies, eating pizza, and enjoying a dram of Talisker. And sometimes that can be healthy for your mental health and general well-being. But I think you get my point, and if you're doing that every night, you might be overindulging. Overindulgence is different for everyone. Let me put it like that. So what is hedonism? Hedonism is basically on the other end of the spectrum of what we talked about 2 weeks ago in asceticism, where asceticism is the absolute denial of the body and self-interests. Hedonism is the opposite, pursuing pleasure and self-interest above all else, while actively avoiding anything that takes away from that pleasure. So I suggest having a listen to that episode on asceticism before continuing here. There are a number of ways that hedonism can be understood, and they get quite technical, getting into psychology and ethics. The Greek word hedone means pleasure, which is where we get the word hedonism from. And it's probably best to understand it as an umbrella term that refers to various ethical theories, all of which place pleasure at the center. Aristippus of Cyrene of the 5th century BC argued that pleasure is the highest ethical good. Epicurus came along with something a little more humble, arguing for pleasure through prudence. That is, building an overall pleasurable life, rather than focusing on and pursuing individual momentary pleasures. We might also think about this from a psychological perspective. This is psychological hedonism, or perhaps even egoism. According to this theory, everything that we do is motivated by the desire for pleasure and the avoidance of pain. And I mean, there's some truth to this. If there are two options before us, one pleasurable and the other painful, we're going to choose the pleasurable one, unless there's other good reasons to pick the painful option. I'm going to give you a couple of options and think about which one you would take. You're buying an apple. Do you take the shiny, unblemished red one, or the one that looks slightly brown and has a dent in it? What if those are the only two apples remaining, and there is a skinny little boy straight out of a Charles Dickens novel who looks like he hasn't eaten all week, who is also looking at that shiny apple?
Please.
You're going to work. Do you buy a coffee on the way, or are you one of those strange people who would not? On the way, would you take the route that goes along the coast, or the route that is all highway and factories? Would you take the job that pays more but is boring? Or that pays less but is more fulfilling?
Yes!
Would you wake up at 4 a.m. in the cold and go for a jog as you train to run a marathon? I think you get the point, and you'll see that often it's not black and white. And personally, I would say anyone running a marathon is a masochistic maniac, but each to their own. If you enjoy running a marathon, good on you. And that's also the point. Pleasure is entirely subjective. So as far as an ethical formulation goes, it's an existential one that is focused on the self. The point to these ethical frameworks that are built around this idea of the pursuit of pleasure is that there is not necessarily a universal objective ethical or moral code. Rather, an action is either good or bad, moral or immoral, if the person performing the action gets pleasure from the act. That's a huge generalization, and this does have a whole bunch of qualifications. Many proponents of hedonism would argue, for example, that true pleasure includes the pleasure of those around you. Think about it. Laughter is contagious. When you hear someone else laugh, you often start laughing too. So the pursuit of pleasure also involves the pursuit of other people's pleasure. Also, drawing enjoyment from the pain of another person is false enjoyment and is a psychological disorder. Most hedonists, though not all, say that hedonism does not equal sadism. In 1986, the Christian pastor and theologian John Piper published a book called Desiring God, where he argued for what he called Christian hedonism. The central point to his proposition is that God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in Him. The Westminster Shorter Catechism, which is a series of statements put forward in the 17th century that defined the early stages of a reformed evangelicalism, states that the chief end of man is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. Piper argued that it should be to glorify God by enjoying Him forever. So not just glorify God and enjoy Him forever, glorify God by enjoying Him forever. He argued that pursuing God and following His ways will always result in our greatest happiness. Let's say someone buys you a present and you say thank you.
Thank you.
Which of the two responses would you then prefer to hear? I hope you like it because I hated buying it for you. It was terribly difficult and painful for me to do so. Or would you prefer my pleasure? Right, we feel honored when someone has taken pleasure in giving us something that we will enjoy. I enjoy buying my wife little presents. She prefers receiving chocolate or gluten-free lollies because flowers die. But she enjoys receiving those presents not just because chocolate is tasty, but because she knows that I was thinking about her, and I enjoyed getting her a little something. I also get a little bit of that chocolate as well. So with God, does He want our reluctant service, or does He want our joyful service? There's some logic here to John Piper's formulation, but I have a couple of concerns. First, this seems to be a far too romanticized understanding of the Christian life. don't think Christian service or obedience always results in our happiness. There can be a rightness to it, knowing that we are taking the correct path, but that doesn't necessarily mean enjoyment. Second, it's too inward focused. How I feel in doing this. Generally, I think this is a misunderstanding of what Jesus taught and perhaps rooted too much in the idea of a personal faith, a personal salvation. The gospel message is thoroughly communal, first and foremost. It is a social movement that seeks transformation and change in the world around us. Framing it in terms of personal pleasure like this is the wrong framework. There is great pleasure and joy to be found in Christianity. But I don't think that that pleasure is the primary objective. So how should we think about this theologically? First, pleasure is good. It is part of the world. To deny the goodness of pleasure is to deny the goodness of the world. We have the capacity to take pleasure in the world around us and what's in it. It's almost an affront to God to not take advantage of that. If God gives us things to enjoy and gives us the ability to enjoy those things, maybe we should. And think about how the author of Acts talks about food. God has given you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons and filling you with food and your hearts with joy. Rain and a full belly honestly sounds like paradise to me. Or what about the psalmist? You cause the grass to grow for the cattle and plants for people to cultivate, to bring forth food from the earth and wine to gladden the human heart, oil to make the face shine, and bread to strengthen the human heart. In Ecclesiastes, we read, "There is nothing better for mortals than to eat and drink and find enjoyment in their toil." This is from the hand of God. There is, of course, that most carnal and primitive of human pleasures, pasta. I am a sucker for a big bowl of carbohydrates with a mountain of cheese. But also, we should talk about sex. If that makes you uncomfortable, or if there are little ears nearby, maybe skip ahead a couple of minutes. And mum, that includes you. Humans are, in general, sexual beings. That's not a universal statement, but by and large, humans think about sex a lot and enjoy sex a lot.
Oh my.
Because it's pleasurable. It's fun. I won't get into sexual ethics, but that is a very important and significant topic that everyone really should think about. But when it is done appropriately and consensually, sex is a gift from God. And it's not just reserved for procreation. You can do it simply to have fun and to draw close to this other person in a way which, I think, actually represents the Trinity in a way. That absolute closeness, intimacy, and oneness. It's also more than just the physical act. It's the thinking about it, the sensual appeal of it all. There is a reason why that old adage is true. Sex does sell. You have this black, bubbly drink. If you put it into a glass bottle that remotely resembles a woman's physique, sales go up by a lot. That's what Coca-Cola did. If you want to sell a pair of shoes, get an attractive person to wear them with little else on, and those shoes will sell. Those are my business tips for today. Now, there is a discussion to be had about the ethics and appropriateness of sexual imagery, especially in the public, but my point here is that people enjoy sex. There's a mind-blowing fact I bet you never thought of before. But God also has pleasure. He takes pleasure in us and in His creation, and that makes sense when we think that all good things come from God. Zephaniah 3:17 says that God rejoices over you with gladness. And Isaiah 62:5 says, "As the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall your God rejoice over you." Now that is some vivid rejoicing. Jesus says in John 15, "I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete." And I like that about God. That is much better than a static, uncaring God. So God feels pleasure. Pleasure is good, but is too much pleasure bad? Possibly, but it depends how we get that pleasure. Also, there is a risk of addiction. Overindulging can lead to an over-reliance on whatever that is. Addictions to food, alcohol, drugs, sex, coffee can be devastating. And if you think that you have an addiction to something, I really recommend finding someone to talk to about it. So a lot of the time, too much is bad. Too much food, too much alcohol, constantly avoiding difficult, uncomfortable things. I should also note that I think whatever you're doing, make sure it's legal, safe, healthy, and if there's other people involved, that it is consensual. Also consider the broader ethical issues. Overindulging could mean that someone else is underindulging. If you've got all the food, someone else is starving. If you've got all the money locked up in investments and banks, someone else is struggling. As I mentioned in the episode on asceticism, I am a fan of the Stoic virtue of discipline and the Buddhist middle way, somewhere between absolute self-denial and overindulgence. Sometimes things do require sacrifice and some level of self-denial. Jesus did call us to deny the self, pick up our cross, and follow him. That doesn't mean we have to spend our lives in misery. But on the other hand, we should avoid overindulgence. And so this is where discipline comes in, having mastery over the self. And I think these are thoroughly biblical ideas as well. I kind of think there is a bit of a flip side to hedonism that makes hedonism as an ethical principle self-contradictory. If you did choose to avoid the dentist, eventually you will have problems that could be very painful. If you choose to keep putting off mowing the lawn, eventually that lawn is going to become a wild jungle, and it will be way harder to get back under control. A little bit of discomfort can make your life a lot better in the long run. I actually quite like mowing the lawn though. So in life, there are lots of little uncomfortable things that, in the long run, improve our lives and decrease anything that brings us displeasure or pain. Of course, adherents of hedonism will probably add various qualifications to this, such as the one that I did just then about embracing the smaller, less pleasurable, kind of uncomfortable things to avoid a much larger, displeasurable thing. And so overall, our lives tip in favor of pleasure. That kind of sounds like Epicureanism, but also the more qualifications you add, the further you stray from the central principles. And so I don't think this is actually hedonistic. It's just sensible. Also, I think a problem with hedonism is that it reduces morality to feeling, if it feels good or not. And I think that's a rather limited way of thinking about how we should live an ethical life, especially in community. I guess my main issue philosophically and theologically with hedonism as an ethical principle is the pursuit of pleasure for pleasure's sake. I think pleasure accompanies good things, but I think we should be doing those things because they are the right thing to do, with the pleasure or enjoyment that we draw from it as a secondary concern, an added bonus. But sometimes good, right, moral things are accompanied by pain or sacrifice, but they are still the good, right, moral thing to do. And that's when we start branching off into the various other ethical frameworks, other isms and ologies that we might explore in a later episode. Let me know if you want me to discuss anything in particular. So I hope this episode has been adequately pleasurable, but not too pleasurable. If you've enjoyed this episode of Isms and Schisms, I would really appreciate your review. Or if you told someone about this podcast, check out the Instagram and the website. Let me know if there are any topics I should cover. And if you are my one listener from Poland, I would love to hear from you. Send me a message. Let's be pen pals. This episode was recorded on the traditional land of the Wadjuk Noongar people. I look forward to examining more isms and schisms with you.